seemed like, as far as she was concerned, that was just about the right tactic to take. You know, that as long as I was pursuing her and making her feel very secure and very confident, and she felt comfortable in staying aloof. And I guess she was just so secure and confident that I would always be there. But when I started refusing to come after Thanksgiving and wouldn't write and was kind of unfriendly on the telephone, I guess it must have affected her, because she came home from school for Christmas vacation and wanted to patch things up, called and wanted to talk and wanted to see me. And I think a couple of times I said, okay, you know, I'll be home at such and such a time from now on over. And then I sat there and waited for her to come, and she didn't come. It was not convenient for her to get away from the family at the time. And she didn't bother calling or telling me that she wasn't going to show up, and I would sit there and wait. So after waiting for her fruitlessly twice, she called to make arrangements to meet a third time, and I told her to go to hell, and if she thought I was going to sit around in the apartment all day long waiting for her to drop by at her convenience, you know, she was out of her mind, and that if she happened to drop by when I was there, fine, I would talk to her, but, you know, I wasn't going to make any special efforts to be around. And it ended up that the whole vacation went by, the 2 weeks that I was seeing each other during the whole 2 weeks. She did manage to get by, to drop by once, and she had a brother driver. And she dropped off my Christmas presents, but it was very, but I wasn't home, and it was very, you know. Then she left and went back to New York and called me, asked me if I liked the presents, and I was rather cool about, you know, about them. And apparently this upset her enough so that a week later she had packed up and come back to Buffalo.
Left school.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like some information about the kind of friends that you made when you went to
I was a phys ed major there, and the women's phys ed department was fairly small. And when I went there, there was a group that was, I guess, fondly known as gym rats. They were a group of people between, you know, all spread out through a number of years, of the people that really didn't have much to do except for hang around the gym. They didn't have any part-time jobs or whatever, and they were the ones that were involved on the athletic teams, and they would be there from the early morning until, you know, 7 or 8 at night every day. And there was a particular zany group of about 6 or 8 of them that were real good friends together. And used to, you know, do practical jokes, and very women-oriented people. I think that, well, out of the group now, there are 3 open lesbians, and the rest of them, I think, are all closet cases. But their total orientation had always been towards women, and they all had tastes of hero worship for women on the faculty. And I guess it was just a group of friendly but infantile phys ed majors that hung around, and I got involved with them, and one of my first activities with them was to go trick-or-treating, get dressed up in costumes and go out and go trick-or-treating at all the faculty's house. So you see what I mean by infant, you know, still acting like young children and still going to bother the teachers. It was fun to bother the teachers, you know.
But these were women who had no, like, real knowledge of their own lesbianism?
No, none of them talked about it. I guess probably the second person to come out in the group. The first person wasn't a phys ed major, but she did hang around with the group, probably because they were so woman-oriented.
Mm-hmm.
And when she came out, she felt, you know, to her it was like, you know, the born-again Christian type, where she had to, you know, proselytize, and she had to just, you know, let everybody know where she was at, because she was compulsively honest.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember the first day that she came and told everybody, said she had something to talk to us about, and told everybody that she was a lesbian. well, she just absolutely mortified half the people in the group, you know, and they just didn't know how to handle it, and the women never felt comfortable to come back again. You know, they made her sufficiently uncomfortable. So I had enough sense to keep my mouth shut about my relationship with my lover. Besides, at that point, I figured why talk about it, it was over. It was something that wasn't, you know, ongoing anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But what began to happen, now these were my cronies, my partners in crime, you know, they were the ones I would, we would go camping, you know, once a month, and we always traveled as a group, and we would go skiing, or we would go here or there, you know. We always ate lunch together, and it was all like a sorority type, I guess, you know. We all played on the same teams. If one of us was going out for softball, we all went out for softball. If one of us was going to join the swim team, we all joined the swim team. We were always together. But about the same time that I stopped going to see Lynn, I started becoming friends with the woman on the faculty again. She was just nice to me, and she, I think one of the, I was in one of her classes, and one of the times I was, it was a gymnastics class, I was in her class, she asked me if I had any special plans for that weekend, and I mentioned to her that I was going to New York to visit a friend, and when I got back from the weekend, she asked me if I had a nice weekend, and I said yes, and from that point on, whenever I was going to New York, she'd ask me about it, and you know, I think she was realizing that I had, you know, something going.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, I kept getting much closer to this person, becoming friends and developing the same sort of relationship that I had started with my roommate, with her, a protege type of relationship.
Mm-hmm.
This woman was the tennis coach at the university, and she was going to help me with my tennis, and she was also an avid skier, and she was going to help me with my skiing. She did fun things. She was a doer type of person. She was always on the go. And I ended up, I think, serving for her as a substitute roommate. And she had a roommate and was the head of the department. And whenever the roommate was unavailable to do things that they had already planned on doing,
mm-hmm.
there would be a quick phone call to me, and I would be the fill-in. And
mm-hmm.
of course, I was always, again, impressed with being considered worthy enough to be going with somebody older. Now this, my roommate is older than I am, and this woman was even older still than I am. She was 10 years older than I was. And I was just so tickled at, you know, traveling in such high class company. Of course, I was ready to drop everything and come at any beck and call. And I did, and we got close at the end of that year, and then the next year we became lovers, my second year in college.
Mm-hmm.
Much to the chagrin of the current roommate.
Did you move in together?
No. It was kind of a covert relationship, and the roommate
mm-hmm.
found out what was going on. There was all sorts of cloak and dagger work going on there, with, you know, her trying to shaft me in the department, and as my department chairman, you know, things would become sticky.
Mm-hmm.
But, then she left after my second year, and
this is the department chair.
Chairperson. No.
The woman you were lovers
with.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I went away to school during my third year of school.
During any of this period, either when you had made your small circle of friends or when you became lovers with the faculty member, did you ever hear anything, or were you ever introduced to any members of a gay community in Buffalo? Did you know that one existed outside of the campus?
Our first exposure to gay community, it took place my second year of college. Like I had said, my roommate had left Columbia for second semester.
And what year are we talking about?
70.
Okay.
And had come back to the Buffalo area and moved in again with her parents. And proceeded to try to get us back onto a 10-minute-a-day type of, you know, I had to be content with picking up the crumbs whenever she wanted to drop her affections, you know, I could be content with the little bits and pieces type of a relationship. Well, towards the, when the school year ended and my lease was up at the apartment I was in, I said, you know, it's now or never, baby, you know, you move out of the house and we live together or call it quits. And so she made the big move and left home. And we got an apartment together the summer between my first and second year of college. And so from that point on, it became, our parents could no longer deny what was going on. They knew that we had resolved our differences and were back together, and they were kind of forced to accept what was, what was happening. And we became more bold because our parents, although it was difficult initially, we had the advantage that we didn't have to be covert for our family's sake. They knew what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe sometime during that school year, my second year, there was a course offered at the university, lesbianism course. I don't know if it was first semester or second semester.
What year was it? There was
70.
70? No.
71. 71?
Well, I taught that course. It was second semester. Was it 71? No, that was 72.
Spring of 72?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that was the year that we first met anybody outside of mm-hmm. each other, and outside of kind of covert acknowledgement among the faculty people, this instructor that I had at school. I was, it was never spoken out loud, but I was sure she knew what was going on. And I knew she was being more than normally friendly towards me.
Mm-hmm.
But
so how did you? Okay, there was a course offered, and
yeah, we saw the course listed in the university newspaper.
Uh huh.
And we spoke about taking it, and I called Women's Studies College, that was the college that it was offered under.
Mm-hmm.
And got your name.
Right.
Called you on a telephone.
Mm-hmm.
And asked you about the course, and you explained to me that you were busy writing a thesis or something, and you wouldn't be teaching the course, but somebody else would.
Okay, that, right, that was the first semester, that was the fall semester of 72 at that point, because I had taught it for the spring semester.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I did teach it the fall semester, right, fall semester of 71,
mm-hmm.
right, right after the summer, we put it together in the summertime. So you wanted to take it, right, and another woman was teaching it that
right.
semester. Mm-hmm.
So you gave us some information
mm-hmm.
in the course,
yeah.
And we called, we decided it sounded like something we'd be interested in
mm-hmm.
taking, and that next semester we both went to the class. And I remember the first meeting was right at the Women's Studies College,
mm-hmm.
the house that houses Women's Studies College.
Right.
And everybody just sat around in a circle, and we had to sign names and addresses on this little card. And everybody was supposed to say a little bit about themselves. And the first maybe 6 or 7 people that talked, and they didn't say anything, and didn't make any statements about their sexuality. And a woman 2 seats from me, then 2 people before me to speak, gave a little brief biography and then stated that she was a lesbian.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when it got to me, then I gave a little biography and then stated that I was a lesbian. I think my roommate almost had a heart attack right there on the floor because it was the first time we never admitted our sexuality to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And so then when I got her time to speak, she didn't say anything. She didn't say that she was my lover or my roommate or anything. She gave her name and her areas of interest, and that was about it. But we started in the course and started going to it and became a little bit more open about our relationship with each other first in front of the women in the course. And we weren't really drawn. We were made to feel very unwelcome and out of it in the course.
Why?
Because we weren't working class. And the class ended up being more of a commentary on socialism and socialist relationships
mm-hmm.
than it was really in lesbianism.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, we were made to feel out of it right from the beginning because we really weren't educated on socialism and never had really thought about class oppression. And there was another couple in the class that was kind of in the same boat, an older couple. I say older than we were, early 30s. And we quickly gravitated together because we both felt, you know, so out of it. And also everybody else in the class was into Butch Femme and said that every lesbian relationship there had to be a Butch and a Femme. And my roommate and I didn't feel that way, and neither did this other couple that we were with.
Had you ever heard those terms before that class?
Yeah, because I had, when I got back from New York in my senior year in high school, I had started doing some research on lesbianism and homosexuality, reading clinical studies and things like that. As a matter of fact, my senior year in high school, I was taking a course, for my history credit, I was taking a course on sociology, and I gave a report on homosexuality. So I had done a little bit of research, and I knew what it was supposed to be all about. That's why I was convinced that we weren't, that wasn't us, that we didn't react and relate that way. Certainly not in the stereotypes that I was really familiar with. You know, one of us didn't go around with loads of lipstick and dresses and high heels and do all the cooking and cleaning, while the other one wore men's pants and men's shirts and had a short butch haircut and talked in a low voice and swaggered and drank beer and stuff. You know, I mean, but those were the exact stereotypes that the other people in the class were into, and that were convinced that everybody dealt more or less on that kind of level than two people in a relationship. So the first friendships that we ever made with another couple were with these other two older women in the class. And the first, I think after about the third or fourth class, they invited us over to their home to for tea and to talk. And we were their first friends. We're still friendly with the couple. They're not together anymore, but we see, you know, them separately. And that was our first reaching to the outside world. We met different people then. They would meet some people, and we would meet some people, and then we would have these small closed parties where everybody would get to know one another. One day we decided to brave the world and went out to the bar for the first time, you know. And
how did you find out what the bar was? And
from the other women in our class.
Oh, they had all gone.
Right, there. At that time, the bar was that place on Main Street, Port of Allen.
The Villa Capri.
The Villa, yeah. Mm-hmm. And we went there once with this other couple, and we were very unimpressed. It was a weeknight, and nothing was going on. It was very quiet. We thought, oh, this isn't what the books say it's supposed to be all about, you know?
That was the only time you went?
No, we've gone, you know, several times since, but that was the first time. We then went with more people on a weekend, and still were unimpressed. That bar was a real dive.
Well, what made you think it was a dive? Was it the people, or the decorations on the walls? Or?
Oh, it was very, very small and cramped and dark and smoky and heavy drinking type of place. Almost every time we were there, people were intoxicated and loud, and I... The reason I was going there was to meet, you know, I wanted to meet other people, to meet other couples, and to have a chance to talk. And I've always been a real dance freak. I love to dance, and there wasn't much room to dance. And once again, we felt uncomfortable and out of place, like we just didn't belong. You know, everybody else knew everybody, but they didn't know us. And to this day, I've never found, it's better, well, I can't say that. It's getting better now, but in those days, if a lone couple or a lone two couples went into a bar, and everybody else knew everybody, nobody made any efforts to try to get to know you, or find out who you were, or talk to you, or make you feel at home, you know. I think that's why we always made an effort to try to go with at least one other couple, maybe two, so we would at least feel like a group among ourselves. But we could go there alone one night and sit there, and nobody would talk to us all night long.
I'm interested in your observations of the kinds of people that were at the bar. Was this a totally lesbian bar?
No. I think it was supposed to be. I think that's what it was supposed to be known for, was to be a women's bar, but there would be none there. And I can remember a number of occasions where straight couples walked in and would sit there, watch the freaks, and after a little while turn around and walk out. But I didn't like the bar. I didn't like where it was. It was located downtown. It wasn't in a particularly nice area of the town. I was always nervous when we went there. It was right on Main Street. I always felt we parked on Main and walked, and everybody would see us walking, and everybody would know where we were going. And at that point, I was still feeling closety, you know, and very careful about who knew what I was doing and what I was involved in. I just never liked it. And I always felt like, you know, we were looked down upon because we weren't working class. It was like we had signs all over our face. I'm white, and I'm not, you know, lower class, and therefore I don't belong.
Mm-hmm. Were there a lot of black women in the bar?
Mm-hmm.
And that made you uncomfortable?
Yeah, and a lot of dyke types that I just couldn't associate with and relate to, you know, that made me uncomfortable, loud and drunken and... And
by dyke types, you mean butch, masculine.
Yeah, right.
Or
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Since that time, your relationships have expanded. You've gotten to know other people. And the mid-70s came, went, and you've stayed together.
In the long run.
Okay.
We've had small, short periods of separations, which I think we've both found have always helped. We've always improved our relationship rather than hurt our relationship.
They were separations because you had to go to school or jobs or
Some of them. But most of the times it was you were going to school, but you chose to go to I went away to graduate school for a year.
Mm-hmm.
But I chose to go away to graduate school rather than stay at home because our relationship was getting on funny terms. It was about at that time that I had always been a subservient member in the relationship. The mat. Always, like I said, always willing to take the crumbs.
The mat?
Okay.
I wasn't sure what word you were saying.
When we moved in together, it was almost a full year before her parents were aware, really, that I was living there.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever the phone would ring, I wasn't allowed to answer the telephone. If her parents would come to the house, I would have to go hide in the closet. I once remember sitting in the coal bin down in the basement for 2.5 hours while her brother and some of his friends were there. They weren't supposed to know I was there, and I sat in the coal bin for 2.5 hours. I sat in a closed closet once for a good hour when her mother and father were there. And, you know, it was just, my presence was not to be known. And if I would be in a car and she would think she saw her parents' car coming, if I was in the car with her, I would have to duck and lay on the floor until we went by, you know, so her parents wouldn't see me in the car with her. And about, as I was getting ready to graduate from college, I decided I had enough of this schlep and enough of being a cheese cook and bottle washer, enough of waiting for her to come home when she decided she was going to come home, enough of always playing second fiddle to her family and being the one to do all the housework and being the one just to do everything.
Mm-hmm.
When I said before we were fortunate family, I meant we didn't split duties and stuff down stereotype male-female type of lines. I did everything. I was both butch and femme. I was the one that had to maintain the car, and I was the one that had to cut the lawn and shovel the driveway and fix the house and put on storm windows, and I was also the one that cooked and cleaned, and because she never had to do any of this stuff when she was at home. And since I was the one cooking, because the family are fairly wealthy professionals, and the children were supposed to help around the house, it was beneath them.
Mm-hmm.
And since I was responsible for her leaving this nice atmosphere that she could go back to any time she wanted to at the drop of a hat, all I had to do was say leave and she could go back to this nice, warm, bosomy family, I had to make it as close to family relationship as possible, which meant I had to do everything.
To keep her.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So I had enough of it. After a couple of years on my way to school,
mm-hmm.
But when I came back, things were, I came back with the understanding that things weren't going to be like that anymore.
And that worked out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
took me a while to learn that I could put my foot down and that, she wasn't going to run away like she had threatened to do. And it took me a long time for me to come on equal terms too. We were still relating as whatever, teacher, student, mother, daughter, I don't know, you know. Mm-hmm. She was the boss and I listened and did what I was told. And until I went away from school for a year and was on my own and got a little bit more self-confidence, I couldn't relate to her as an equal, you know what I'm saying? These are my wants and these are my needs and I expect some of them to meet that as well. But when I came back, things were much better. Our relationship was on a much better tenor. Mm-hmm. And we never really stopped being lovely. You know, once a month she would fly down to see me and once a month I would fly back to see her and we spent all vacations together and stuff. And we wrote incessantly and called a couple times a week and we still loved each other, but it was just we needed a separation. We needed time to grow and to get to know ourselves and to grow up, really. You know, neither one of us had to grow up.
So you have run your relationship for the most part during all of this time in at least a monogamous fashion.
Except for one brief, not too brief, for one incident with this instructor at Buffalo.
Uh-huh.
Part of my relationship with her was probably almost a punishment to them.
Mm-hmm.
Because this woman was here when I needed somebody, you know. My roommate had abandoned me, I thought, and felt, and gone away to New York and left me to the wolves. And here was this nice woman being kind to me and ready to step into her place.
Mm-hmm.
And so when my roommate came back and we set up housekeeping, I made it perfectly clear that we weren't going to go through the same process we had before. I was not going to drop all my friends for her. And I was not going to just see her and her alone. That I had this group of 8 or 10 people from university, my cronies, and that they were still my friends and that I would go camping with them and play with them. And they were going to be able to come to the apartment and if she didn't like it too bad. And she didn't like it and she would disappear into a room every time they came and refuse to socialize with them. But she lived with it. And I also told her that, you know, I was very good friends with this instructor and I wasn't about to terminate that friendship either. And when my relationship with the instructor became sexual, it was all out in the open. We knew what was happening. And I guess she was just confident enough in my feelings for her and her feelings for me that she figured she could weather it and then it would pass. And it did.
Mm-hmm.
Aside from that.
And since then, you have maintained a monogamous relationship even though you've gone away for periods of time. Mm-hmm. Has that been difficult or I guess what I want to get a sense of is have you seen the other relationships around you do the same thing or do other people deal with their relationships in other ways?
Other people seem to break up.
Uh-huh.
I think one of the things that was clear between Lynn and I from the very beginning is, unlike many other couples, we never made a verbal commitment to each other. It was always perfectly clear that we were free to leave whenever we wanted to, and that we would stay together as long as we loved each other and cared for each other, but as soon as we didn't, we would separate. And each time when the going started to get rough, we would separate. But we never ceased being friends, and we never ceased being lovers. Maybe we needed space and room.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a couple of three times of extended separation for, I think, 2 summers we were away from each other, and then this 1 year. But like I said, we never got the feeling that we didn't belong to each other. By that time, we had a family. We were a family. And I think that's the best way I can describe our relationship now. We're family, and we will always be family. You know,
mm-hmm.
Even if something happens and we're not together, she's still family to me. And,
mm-hmm.
But I've never been possessive, the possessive type, ever. I like getting a lot of attention, and I like somebody being around and being with me, but I never had to be possessive with Lynn because I was her only woman friend. And it wasn't until we started meeting other couples that she began being friendly with other women. And even still then, she tends to be quiet and not get real involved and go along instead of being, you know, the aggressive. But when I say we were monogamous, I meant monogamous from the standpoint of that our primary energies were focused on the other people. I mean, that she was the center of my life and I was the center of hers. Mm-hmm. And our place together was home, and we came back to home, and we by then had become family, and we needed each other and we wanted to be with each other. But that doesn't mean we never slept with anybody else. We, neither one of us had ever any qualms. She would get maybe hurt because she knows that any sexual relationship that I have with somebody else is motivated out of deep yearning. You know, neither one of us are promiscuous at all. No. Now neither one of us are promiscuous. I've had, you know, I've only slept with 3 people besides her.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was this instructor, and another one was 2 other people that... But it was really, we were close friends, and they
mm-hmm.
happened to be gay, and it was maybe a one-night or a two-night thing, and it was just, wasn't out of any intense sexual drive or anything, it was just out of a close bond of friendship. And I think maybe those things hurt her a little bit, but she also knew me enough to know that I was being totally honest with her when I said it was out of friendship, that it was out, because I loved these people as friends, and there was nothing for her to worry about, and when I told her that, she believed me, and it was okay. Now she, on the other hand, She slept with 2 other women, and it was, for her, it was just, she's much more high on sex than I am, much more, and it was just one occasion. She got intoxicated, it was while I was away from dinner, and this other person made sexual advances towards her, and she got very turned on and slept with the woman, never felt like she could face her again, type of deal.
Mm-hmm.
And another woman was just a friend that had never slept with anybody but her lover. And this was before this other person. And then had never slept with another woman besides me. And they just slept together just to see what it was like.
Mm-hmm.
Found it very unfulfilling.
Mm-hmm.
But while she's only slept with 2 other women besides me, she's probably slept with 30 men. And,
but it was prior to
some
getting
prior
together.
And some after.
Oh,
and
mm-hmm.
But it never bothered me. You know, I mean, I always knew that it was just a sex thing with her, and that she didn't
mm.
care about him at all. And
does
and
it continue now?
No, it was the first couple of years that we were together. While I was in college, I think she was still having a very difficult time handling her homosexuality. And like I said, I was as well as being the first woman she'd ever slept with, that was her first female friend. She just was not used to associating and relating to women at all. She's always been able to relate instead of men.
Mm-hmm.
And to this day, she says if we ever broke up, she doubts if she'd get involved in another relationship with a woman, she'd probably get married and have children. Because the family pressure is just so, it still is very strong on her to be normal. But, it was her first couple of years. She was just, you know, she got back into teaching and was sleeping with the teacher she was teaching with, and was still sleeping with her old boyfriends that she had known before she met me. But never was the least bit jealous, because I knew it was just, you know, for her it was just a fling. It was just
mm-hmm.
a sex thing. It wasn't anything else. I knew she didn't care about him.
Mm-hmm.
She always came back. As a matter of fact, when we would get back together and start sleeping together, I wanted a blow-by-blow description of everything that went on, because it would turn me on to hear how she talked,
mm-hmm.
you know, how she related with this guy.
Mm-hmm.
But that stopped. This took place for maybe the first couple of years. I'd say maybe the last 6 years or 7 years that she hasn't slept with anybody but me, I don't believe.
Mm-hmm. About the other people that you became friends with, their relationships seem to have been different from yours.
Yeah. We see this phenomenon going on about us. Basically, we have two groups of friends, and both groups of friends have been functioning as a group for maybe 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And what we see is musical lovers taking place within the group. And it just never happened with us. I mean, we liked these other people as friends, but we never were sexually attracted to any of them, or even emotionally attracted, so that we could see each other being, you know, the other having a partnership with any of these people.
Do you think that that kind of thing is more common in the gay community than your kind of relationship?
Yeah, I do. In our kind of relationship, I'm not sure. I think this musical lovers in the gay community is more common than it is in that homosexual community. And I think the only reason for this is because these are the other lesbians that these people know. And until quite recently, they haven't had any opportunity to meet other people outside of their little party groups. You know, until recently, there wasn't a Madison Gay Center where they could go and meet single, unattached lesbians that were just going there to socialize and stuff.
Mm.
So what would happen is if couple A and couple B split at approximately the same time, one they would mix and get back together again.
Uh-huh. Do you think that the rise of gay liberation organizations and centers and things like that has changed that kind of scene?
I think it's happening more. It's helping to have it to change it more. But unfortunately, I think the people that take make themselves available to those kind of centers are very selective people. College kids go to Madison and go to those sort of centers. And maybe young people just out of college that still have university connections.
Mm-hmm.
Most of our friends are professional people, are teachers, nurses, professors, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And are still very, very in the closet, very much in the closet. And you would no sooner find these people at a Madison Service Center than you would finding them walk down the middle of the street in purple carrying an I Am a Lesbian banner, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just, to them, it's just something that they wouldn't feel that they were capable of doing. So for people like that, people that are still in the closets, I guess it's the only way they're going to meet other people is within their own little groups. And every once in a while, this group is expanded because somebody may have found themselves a lover outside of the group and bring that person into the group. And,
mm-hmm.
Or somebody may meet a new couple somewhere and bring that couple
mm-hmm.
into the group.
How are new people and new couples accepted into this kind of group?
We haven't had any problem.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, the only problem that we've seen happen is if the new couple that's coming in is too young. These women are afraid of college-age people because they don't think that these college-age people have any discretion, and that their names and things are going to be spread throughout, you know, throughout the community.
What's the age group we're talking about this group of people, the professional group?
We're the youngest couple in both groups, and most of the women are... I'd say start at late 30s and go up to late 50s and 60 years old.
Mm-hmm. And you have never sought out, or you don't find the need at this time to seek out people that are closer to your own age?
We have. Maybe two other couples our own age that we fraternize with.
Are they also part of this professional grooming? Do they go?
They're instructors and they're, no, they're not. They're pretty much loners. They
mm-hmm.
see us and nobody else, and it's very hard for us to bring them into a circle. And the other people our own age are straight people that know about
mm-hmm.
us and accept us and really are our best friends.
Mm-hmm.
Our best friends are not other gay couples. They are our straight friends. And it's something that we're happy that we have straight friends and that we're not confined to just a gay community. We feel bad that we haven't maintained our friendships with most of our gay
couple friends. And I think part of this, my roommate blames on herself because she does not extend herself in relationships and does not try to be, just will not put out any energies towards forming new friendships. And then people feel uncomfortable in her presence and think that she doesn't like them, when in fact she has no negative feelings about them at all. But she just has no feeling of need to become friends with them either. You know, she'll just sit there like a wall fixture and watch what's going on around her and pretend to go as long as nobody points out the fact that she's not extending herself and that she's being unfriendly. As soon as somebody makes a comment that she's not talking and not socializing and start feeling that she doesn't care for him, then she feels uncomfortable and doesn't want to go there anymore.
It's such pressure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we've lost a number of friends because of this. But also, we've seen friendships, close friendships with people that with whom Lynn has become very close. And we've gotten to know her and realize that she really is a nice person, just shy, and it takes a little time to get to know her. We've seen friendships break up just because the couple's broke up. And then, you know, you functioned as a couple with a couple and did things together as a foursome, and all of a sudden, you know, there's not a foursome anymore. And these people are with new people, and maybe you don't particularly care for their new lover, or maybe they try to make you feel like you have to take sides, and you don't feel like you want to be put in that position. So we've seen our gay friends really diminish. And we, as of yet, know no other couple that's been together. The couples that we initially met when we came out 10 years ago, not one of the couples are still together. So it's, you know, our friendships have changed. Like I said, our best friends are our straight friends that know about us.
Mm-hmm. You said you were real glad that you had maintained a straight relationship and that your world was not confined to lesbians. The other people in the two circles that you know of, have they also maintained straight friends, or is this a common thing that
No, I don't think it is. I don't think it really is. Of course, everybody has to function in a straight world. You know, you have to realize that's what's going on around you, and these people have jobs and they go to work and they function in a straight world. But their social activities, I think, are primarily restrained to family or their gay friends.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when there's a party and they give a party, it's always the same group of people and it's always gays.
Mm-hmm.
They never have any of their straight friends mixed with their gay friends. As a matter of fact, one of the things that Lynn and I have spoken about a number of times is the reason maybe that we feel that we're much closer to our straight friends than we are to our gay friends is because we became friends with these straight people because they shared common interests and likes and dislikes, and we just had a tremendous amount in common with them and have become very, very attached. They're like an extended family. Where we have found that a number of our gay friends, the only reason we're friends with them is because they're gay. We don't have any other common interests, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Not common educational backgrounds, not common cultural interests, not, you know, not common recreational interests, you know. Nothing common except the fact that we're all gay. You know? Our gayness has brought us into contact with people of different backgrounds, and for that, I think we're kind of grateful. You meet all sorts of different people, and it's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But these are, like I said, people we would never choose to have as friends were they not gay. And I think we're beginning to realize that it's not enough.
Have you tried to find friends who are gay who also share common interests?
Yeah, now these are the couples that we've gotten to know and have unfortunately split up, and then you're not quite, you're comfortable on where to go. We do, you know, we have a number of friends that we still see one of or the other.
Mm-hmm.
And generally what we do is we call and we say, you know, would you like to go to the show or whatever, one or the other of them. And then if we're having a party or a group function, we invite them both and say, bring whoever you're with now, you know, you're both welcome. And generally what happens is one of them chooses, they, between themselves, they iron out who's going to come and who's not going to come, and one of them shows and the other one doesn't, you know.
But you let, you both let of them know the other one is invited, and if they want to deal with it, they deal with it. Uh-huh. The two circles of friends that you're talking about how many people would you say are in
each?
Each
circle?
Yeah.
I'd say the circles fluctuate between, six and eight couples.
Six and eight couples.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's always couples.
Uh-huh.
If somebody becomes estranged and with their lover, if they don't immediately gravitate to somebody else in the group that has just recently broken up, either they find somebody real quick and inculcate that person into the group, or I guess they just don't feel comfortable.